welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We are giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. And I'll go through the preliminaries on this program at the beginning. We can be heard on this refined radio station Sundays at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m., Monday mornings at 1 a.m. You know we stream the programs live at that time at richarddugan.com. And the podcasts of these programs are available on SoundCloud, iTunes, TuneIn Radio, Stitcher, Spotify, and a whole bunch of other places. And if you're listening to the SoundCloud edition, if you will, you're going to look in the upper right-hand corner. You're going to see a little grocery cart. You want to click on that because that's going to take you to our guest's website, which we will be giving you here in just a few moments, so that you can continue your evolutionary process, continue your growth and advancement, your education, inspiration, and edification. We certainly hope that you will go to our guests' websites so that they can know that you're listening not just to this program, but you're listening to them and you're hearing what it is that they're trying to put out there, because you wouldn't be going there if you weren't at least a little curious. And if you'd like to support this program financially, we would be so grateful for that. We thank those who have and will support this program. And we have a PayPal and Patreon account, and you can go there and contribute in that fashion as well. So please do what you can. And if this is the first time you've listened to this program, by all means, go to our missions page. You can read about what we are all about if you haven't gathered that in this particular program. And, of course, at the bottom, there are the Patreon and PayPal account links so that you can support the program if this resonates with you. My guest today is Travis Ruskus, and we're going to be talking about a very interesting process that I think you're going to find fascinating. I think I did actually see a DVD on a video, a YouTube video on this, which is really interesting. Basically, we're going to help you to discover the mindfulness of balance through a work he has published. It's a beautiful book. I have to tell you, the what's nice is it's in color and black and white, and it's called The Rock Balancer's Guide. And Travis, thanks so much for joining us here on the program, and I certainly hope that you are not sitting high atop a series of rocks that have been balanced out there in the San Francisco Bay Area.
Richard, thanks for having me on the show. And yeah, I would say, you know, every building is a big rock balance if you kind of think about it.
You actually have a building there in San Francisco, if I'm not mistaken, that wasn't balanced too well. It's leaning.
Yes, a very expensive building, yes.
That's going to be very expensive to fix, too, from what I understand.
Yeah, like a lot of our problems are, I think.
Yeah.
Great metaphors for each of our deep issues that we have.
Oh, absolutely. And what I find so interesting is that whoever was in charge of the initial design and placement of the building didn't do their job. And from my perspective, are fired. You know, I mean, come on. Are you serious? You know, and it goes back to that old biblical adage of, you know, building your foundation on sand, which is exactly what they did.
Love it, yeah.
As opposed to on rock, you know.
Yeah, you know, a lot of those huge buildings, like the huge Salesforce Tower that just got built a couple years ago, and the things they continue to build down there in Soma are actually built on, like you're saying, sand. Like they put sand over the bay and then put these really big, expensive buildings on it. So it's just pretty funny. And I just think it's interesting to see, especially as like the new Chase Center comes up where the Warriors are playing. They kind of moved from Oakland to San Francisco and built this huge stadium on sand. But you have all this money, and you'd think that, you know, with enough money you can do anything and do it perfectly. But it just goes to show that you know, you got to have some solid foundations and a core kind of truth before you can just build the biggest building in town. So
yeah,
I went to the Chase Center recently to see Dave Matthews play, and I got to say it was pretty cool. They definitely nailed it. I don't think that there's any problems with that,
it's the foundation. It's the foundation.
Yeah. Oh, and with that too, mm-hmm. just to really kind of touch up, when I teach workshops with people, I find that as soon as we start building rocks, as soon as they can get past the first rock and the second and the third, they quickly become obsessed with the top rock. That it's all about the top rock. But really, to get the highest, coolest, amazing top rock, you have to have an incredibly strong first rock. So I would just kind of throw that out there firsthand.
Well, and it's a good place for us to start. And the other aspect of it too, when you talk about money, to carry this to a sort of a conclusion, is that, and I remember back in the 70s when solar power was first starting to come into vogue, if you will, they were first talking about it. People would say, oh no, it's too expensive. And I said to myself, as to I've said this to other people, I say, you say right now it's too expensive. Do you know how much more expensive it's going to be? If you're concerned about money, you better be concerned about it now, because you're going to be spending one heck of a lot more for what we're talking about creating down the road. And in one sense, we are, because we didn't start to work on these projects and so forth. I think that the space program is a key lesson in that respect. There were many, many other technologies that came out of our space program from the 60s, and now we have some incredible stuff. I mean, we have our smartphones are more powerful than all the computers that were designed to help us to get to the moon.
We still can't go there.
And we still can't go there. Right, exactly. But the point, of course, being that look at all of the innovations that we have in our world today, right?
Yeah.
And it didn't really cost that much in the long run. But what if we hadn't gone to the moon? What if we hadn't tried to work and develop these different technologies at that time? Where would we be today? I don't think we'd be as far along as many people think we would be. It's kind of like the lesson of Edison, who developed the light bulb. People would ask him how many times he failed. He says, well, I never failed. I just found 990 ways it didn't work. And then he, boom, voila. Now we have, and now another gentleman came up with a new version of the light bulb. It's an LED that provides as much light, if not more, but doesn't heat up. There's no heat involved. I mean, it's astounding how far we've come. But we wait and we wait and we wait and we wait to solve problems, thinking that somewhere down the road, the magic bullet will be found and Travis will spend less money, but we don't. And that's the astounding part of it.
You know, what is money? Money is just energy.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. I think getting others to understand that is huge, because, you know, money is a thing. Money does this. Money has power. But money is just merely exchange of energy. And what people buy is what the kind of energy that flows in and out. So
exactly.
When I find that people are, you know, tight with money, and I used to be that when I was a kid, especially in high school, you know, total scarcity mindset. I didn't have a lot of money flowing in because I wasn't really willing to give it out. So I think there's so much to unpack in this, just along with money. But that's why I love rock balancing, because it gives you so many different tangents to go in and talk about, you know, all the different, I guess, not problems, but areas where we need to find alignment in our lives. And money is definitely one. Like, financial is a huge part, because I find that, especially with the work that I'm doing, that most of us are doing jobs that we don't like to get money. And if I just wish that we lived in a world where at a young age we're able to see and embrace our gifts and get those gifts nurtured, because each one of us has a purpose to be here and has incredible talents, but I feel like we just kind of get pushed into a box of, you know, do these 5 to 10 things on this piece of paper on this job description for the next 40 years, and then you retire with all your money, and then that's it. But for me, I kind of want to live a life of abundance and experience. And yes, money is definitely a big part of it, but there's so much more to life than that. And when I first discovered rock balancing, one of the greatest unlocks for me to this whole system that we've created in our society is how amazing that moment was, because it was free, but also, like, you're engaging with rocks that are free. Like, I get kind of caught up in landscaping companies because, like, do they own the rock that they're selling? Like, it's a weird kind of dynamic that goes on.
And that's the other aspect, too, from my perspective. There's a wonderful, I try to quote this as often as I can. There's this wonderful song, Irish tune, and the line basically is that to me is so profound. You don't own the land. The land owns you. Mm. You know, and I find it interesting, as much as I would love to to buy into the concept of this American construct of, you know, life, liberty, pursuit of happiness, and property, you know, owning property. You own nothing, because when you're dead, you don't own it.
Whose property was it before?
And before, you know, that, and before
conquest.
That. Yeah, like, exactly. Exactly.
It's crazy.
Now, again, I do understand, you know, that people want to live with those constructs. That's fine. I get that. Just like we live with the construct of time.
Sure.
But if there's, this is what's fascinating. If there were an earthquake and a portion of course, they always talk about portions of California dropping off into the ocean. If there was a massive earthquake, right? Well, take a look at Hawaii. You got a volcano that's spewing out lava and it's making new land. I thought, boy, the real estate agents are going to love this, you know?
Yeah, just making money.
Did you ever have a pet rock as a kid?
You know, I can't really recall if I had a pet rock. That's okay. A great question.
You know? You're familiar with them, obviously.
Yeah, I think it's a great concept. And it's funny to me of a pet rock, because it's just attachment. And I find with myself that what I wanted to do, or what kind of naturally happened, is as I was going out to the beach and creating these like amazing rock bounces, I was pushing myself to my highest limit, to my creative edge, and beyond that, and then beyond that, and then coming back a little bit to meet reality. But whenever I'd have the balance up and standing and I enjoy it, right before I left, I would always knock it over. And that's a very important part of rock balancing, just in case we don't touch up on it in the future of mm-hmm. this conversation. But whenever I would knock it down, I'd love to record a little slow-mo and find one rock and just kind of pull it out of the balance, and the balance would just collapse. And it would be cool to see the different ways that these balances would just slowly kind of unfold back into the calm abyss that they were in. But I'd have this attachment with these rocks that I was pulling, like this tiny little rock that represented almost this battle that I had with myself. And I would have them on my desk or stuff like that. But recently I had to purge all of them, because I realized, you know, you can't attach yourself to this stuff. It's almost like the opposite of what I'm trying to convey here. So mm-hmm. I have lived through this, and I would say that a pet rock is really great, but like, what's better than a pet rock is not a pet rock, if you kind of get what I'm saying.
Exactly, because you don't have the attachment,
mm-hmm.
which means that you, and I use this metaphor, if you will, actually it's more than a metaphor, you don't have to pay someone to store it somewhere down the road, especially if you start collecting pet rocks and creating your own rock family. Now yep. you've got to store them. You've got to find some place to keep them safe, and on and on and on. And I'm going to translate this over into human beings. I mean, here you and I were chatting away, and I'm really getting a good vibe from you, as the phrase goes, and we're having a great conversation. And I think what you're doing is really unique, especially from the standpoint of teaching people about balance. And of course, the first aspect of that we talked about at the very beginning of this interview, and that is, make sure that when you start your rock tower, if you will, you make sure it's got a strong foundation. Because if you don't, then it's just going, as the weight goes one way or the other, it's going to fall apart. But we have you thought about it from the standpoint of the way we attach ourselves to others, to other people? Certainly our pets are part of that, as that equation as well. And that's not to say that that's a bad thing or it's wrong, but sure. It certainly does generate, in the end, it certainly generates a huge amount of emotion. I mean, you think about it. You hear on the news every day about people around the world who die, who get hurt. And yeah, you sort of, oh, that's so sad. That's just too bad. But it doesn't really impact you. Not in the way your partner, your spouse, your children, your pet, cat, dog, whatever, your mother, father, close best friend, etc., goes through that same experience of injury or say death. And boy, some people lose it. That may, and they grieve for, you know, could be for a long, long time.
Sure.
Because of the attachment. But it seems to me that that's, as human beings, that's sort of unavoidable, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think that is such a great insight of like how attachment generates emotion. And, you know, we could have a whole 3-hour conversation on that because there's so much to unpack. But I find that, you know, in a very kind of high level, when you're attaching to something, you're kind of like, you're not in flow and you're kind of holding up the moment, because the moment's always going to move on to the next one and the next one and the next one, regardless of if you want it to or not. Like, thankfully my parents are still both healthy and strong. But eventually the day's going to come where they're no longer going to be alive. Mm-hmm. And to me, this is just, I think about this all the time when I see them and they say, don't worry about it, I'll be fine. I'm like, no, really, like, this is going to be hard on me, guys. Like, I'm like pre-talking about their death with them. It's really fun stuff. But I'm thinking about how when we attach ourselves, we're not in that flow. And when you can let go of attachment, you can more easily move on to the next moment and kind of work in unison, like you're saying, with how, you know, life kind of guides you. You're not guiding life. And there's a whole debate. Like, we can get into a lot of philosophical discussions, but one thing that kind of came to mind real quick is like, the people who have pain, or let's say like you get in a car accident and like you break your leg and you're caught up in this pain for months, like you got to get a new kneecap and it becomes like this whole process. What happens usually is like, we can get so attached to that story of like, you know, I was in that accident, I broke my knee, and the knee can be healed. Like, it can be years later and you're still attaching yourself to that experience rather than kind of moving on. So I think that I guess the question for you is, Richard, how do you move on from that attachment? How do you personally, like, what's your process of kind of letting go?
Well, it's interesting because I had an experience back in 2003 when a dear friend of my wife's and mine, who lived across the street from us, lost the lease on his house, on the house he was staying in, he was living in, and we said, well, why don't you come live with us? And 3 months later, in October of that year, he passed away in our home. My wife came home, and he likes sleeping on the floor, so he's laying face down on the floor. She doesn't think anything of it, and she goes in, and she takes a shower, comes out, and she's in the medical field, so she hears this gurgling sound. She knows exactly what that is. She flips him over. She begins CPR. She calls 911. I come home with all the emergency vehicles all around the house thinking, oh, my God, what happened to my wife, to Amrita? And, of course, it turns out it's him. And he, it turns out, they declared him brain dead and so forth and so on. And I remember the day after he had passed on I think it was the 11th of October. He passed on the 10th, 10/10/2003. And we were laying in bed after feeling so exhausted from just the whole ordeal. And I became enraged. I was angry as hell that he had died. He was like the father that I have, because I love my father, who is also still alive. Both my parents are and healthy and well and doing good. But he was going to, he was like the bit more like the big brother that I'd never had. Now I have a younger brother. I'm his big brother. But this guy was going to teach me about cars and so on and so forth. And I was in my I was already in my 30s. I hadn't learned about that stuff. And he was going to show me all kinds of neat stuff. And we were going to learn, I was going to learn together with him as he worked on his truck and so on and so forth. And he dies. Not only that, we always had great dinners together, the three of us. Very close. We were a family. And I was so mad. And I actually was able to become the observer of my anger, even in that time, going, where did this come from? You know, I was like, I was angry, but I was surprised at the anger. Yeah. Like, what's going on? And then, of course, all the tears and everything, and worked through that. I've had animals. My dear, dear beloved Makushla, who passed away, interestingly enough, on the 12th of October, 2018. I had to let her go because she was already to a place where it was time, and she let me know this. And I didn't cry over her until I was in a therapy session with a friend of mine going through what they call life between lives therapy, where they take you to your past life, take you to your death, and then to that space between that death and the new birth into, in this case, this lifetime. Fascinating.
That's an interesting space.
It is.
Talk a little more about that?
I will, but let me finish with the whole aspect of attachment.
Yeah.
So now I get to my parents. They're healthy. They're doing great. My dad ended up going into the hospital a few months ago because he had pneumonia. He's free and clear of it, doing great, feeling great. He's 88. My mother just turned 85. And I think about the fact that, just like what you said about your folks, I know that one day I'm going to get that call. And my wife is going to say, go. Go. Be there with your family, with your brother and sisters. And I'm thinking, I see my parents not as parents anymore. I just see them as really good friends. And I got really excited when my mother told me that her sister is taking her and a couple of other people on a vacation to Hawaii. My dad is not a fan of traveling, so he's staying back in Phoenix. And I'm going, wow, that is so cool. Oh, man, you know, and it's not like, I'd really love to go with you. No, I just thought, wow. And it's not one of those things where it's like, oh, my God, you're 85 and you're still moving around. That's incredible. No, she's been active, both of them. And it's just so exciting. But I don't see them as my parents, not in that relationship anymore. And I have to be honest with you, being friends with them is even a closer relationship. And I think about that day when I get that call. And I sit here intellectually. Maybe you've gone through this process too. I'll be okay. I'm sure there'll be some tears. I'll miss them, but I'll be, you know, and this attachment, I'm looking right now at one of your stacks, one of your rock towers. I don't know what else to call it.
Rock balance is just.
Rock like balance. That. Okay. I'm looking at one of these. And I'm seeing that there are larger rocks higher up that are on the foundation, even though the foundation itself is a giant boulder, okay? But the first rock is very small, and then it even gets smaller, and then you got a big rock, and then another smaller. And I'm thinking, now these are all attached one to another. They're stacked until you, Travis, hit either pull a rock out like in Jenga, the game, or knock them over, however you do that. And you can look at the shapes that the balance makes, and it's just incredible. But right now they're attached, one on top of another on top of another. And I think that the one thing that you have a quote in your book, and if I can pull that up again, having to do with, now in this case, the book, which of course, folks, is The Rock Balancer's Guide, is dedicated to those in pursuit of enlightenment. But you have another quote in here having to do with evolution in terms of one generation you know, that the next generation is the evolution of the last, or something along those lines.
Yep.
And I find that so profound, and that's kind of how I'm looking at things these days, and saying, look, you know, okay, I'll miss them, but boy, they gave us not just life, but they gave us such incredible freedom to explore this world and to explore other people and to explore other ideas and philosophies, that it's like, I don't know. I mean, maybe from the physical standpoint, Travis, we'll both, you know, be a puddle of tears somewhere for a short time, hopefully. But hopefully, yeah. hopefully remember, too, that, my God, they're still alive because I'm here. And I don't know about you. I don't know if you have brothers and sisters, but I've got four sisters and a brother. And one of my sisters has a daughter who's had two children. It's kind of cool to say I'm a great uncle. Yeah. But you get what I'm, you know what I'm saying? It's like,
yeah.
can we, and to me, there's nothing unkind about that. I'm not being disrespectful or saying, I don't care about them. I'm going to go on and do my thing, you know? No, I think I feel honored to carry on that legacy in the way that I'm doing it. And then through these programs, since I have no human kids. Can you share with us your perspectives in that regard? And even maybe what I was just sharing about how I perceive your towers, your balances, in a level, there's a certain level of attachment in them because of the way that they are stacked and balanced.
Yeah, the rock balances, it's pretty crazy how it's essentially my energy, but I'm nowhere in the photo. It's this really cool dynamic. But what you're saying with kind of evolution and death and all this stuff is, you know, it's very true. I'm glad that you're able to kind of pick up on these elements of it. And I would even say that these balances represent our own lives and how, you know, we start as children, grow the base, grow the foundation that either affects us if we have a wobbly balance or not. And, you know, there's ways with rock balancing that you can, if you have a big rock, it will affect, like, on top of a super tiny stack, it will affect the stack, but you have to kind of shift the lower rocks a little bit to make sure that it can accommodate the weight of the new rock, and so forth. But I personally have the belief that we all die when we fulfilled our dharma or purpose in life. And, you know, for some of us, it can be hard to really grasp that because, you know, I think of someone in my high school who passed away a year after we all graduated, and she was the first person really in our high school who passed away, and we were all shocked. We were just like, wait, this isn't supposed to happen for like another 30 years. Why did this happen? And, you know, it's just understanding that those moments that we shared in the hall, and I even dated her kind of briefly, and I was just like, her smile was so infectious, and she was filled with so much positivity that she was actually fulfilling her purpose right then and there, but we were just so caught up with the tests that we were taking and et cetera that it's hard for us to really kind of be in that moment and truly appreciate that because, you know, all we have is this moment. That's all you're really kind of guaranteed. And if you can truly see into somebody, then you will see, I guess, almost yourself and everything that you need is being given to you at this moment. And, you know, sometimes it's not what you really want. It's kind of what you need. And I look at these rock balances and the creations that I make, and I look at the top rock, and I think that's when you've hit it. That's when you've really kind of, you can die almost, you know? So I'm kind of concerned because here I have this great book, and it's been really impactful on other people's lives, and I feel like I've really kind of nailed down that purpose. So I'm just like, you know, pretty scared opening doors or like, you know, riding on my motorcycle and stuff like that of like, is it now? But at the same time, it's just like being okay with that and just continuing to push forward so strong with so much belief in my purpose and gift in life that I don't really fear death because I'm living true to myself. And I think that is the most important part. It's not about, you know, after, you know, high school, we all go and get great degrees and then we get great jobs and then we're miserable at the jobs and then we retire. It's about getting out of high school and finding your true self and then embracing that true self to its fullest extent. And like me, that's my belief. I think that if I can go all in on this art, all in with rock balancing, that, you know, money is secondary and money will definitely come to me. Like, this book is amazing. Getting translated so far, we're translated in French and Korea, coming out in the next couple of years. But that was completely unexpected to me, and a great little little chunk of change there to kind of reimburse that. But I didn't do those translations for the money. I did it because I want to impact as many people as I can, because it's like what you're saying here. It's about impacting those people so that they can impact the next people and the next generation, the next generation, and kind of almost circling back to what we were talking about at the beginning of this conversation of how, what are we doing right now? We got to set ourselves up for the future instead of just consuming in the present. So there's so many things I could say with what you just said. I'm just really glad, Richard, that we're on the same wavelength here.
I find it fascinating, too, that it's kind of a weird word to use, but the diversity, the diversity of rocks that you use in each one of your balances, you know, again, because as I said, as I'm describing, especially the one on the cover, you know, you start out with, of course, you've got this big boulder that you're using as your foundation. And you have a good-sized rock, and then there's a smaller one, and a smaller one, and still a smaller, smaller, and then a great big old long one. And then there's a one about the size of the initial rock at the bottom on top of it, and then there's a smaller one on top of that, a little larger, and then a little larger, smaller. I mean, it's like, how in the heck does he do that? How in the world does he get? And then there are these configurations. It's not just straight towers, straight up 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 rocks. You've got shapes. You've got curves. You've got there was one in here I saw that was unbelievably elaborate, that was just going all over the place. I mean, it's like I think this is Photoshopped. I think he's using Photoshop in this picture here. There's no way that he's getting these rocks to balance like this, going in 17 different directions and going up at the same time. It's just, it's unreal. But it's there. It's right there in color and black and white. You have I find some fascinating images in here as well. And one of the things that I have always been intrigued by is an author's table of contents. And you have basically seven chapters, not including the introduction or the simple ask or the gallery. And they basically go through, and I'll be honest with you, the first letter of each does not create an acronym. But be that as it may, although I suppose if you could learn how to pronounce it, you have breathe, opportunity, belief, balance, limits, release, and then the last one, which is, I think it's great, evolve. And that is what we are trying to do. I have to ask you, before we go to break here, and we have plenty of time, in reference to evolve, and I paraphrased that one quote from your book about our evolution. I used to think back in the 60s when I was, of course, watching, as probably most people of my age did, the Jetsons. And I look today and going, what the heck happened? We should be a heck of a lot farther along. And one of the things that I've realized is that our society and our system is set up. It's set up not to progress. It really is. I mean, it's maybe that wasn't the initial design over 240 years ago, roughly, or 30, whatever it is. But that's how it has evolved to where we're no further along than we were 50 or 75 or 100 years ago as a society. I'm not talking about technology here. I'm not talking about learning how to build your high skyscrapers on sand versus rock. And then going, oops, I'm talking about us as human beings evolving to a place where, and I guess the best analogy I can think of is, where we have a people that give a damn about one another, that care about one another, and want the best for one another without taking advantage of one another. Can you share your perspectives on that?
Yeah, I'm like every moment is a fresh start, including this one. And I just challenge, myself, you, Richard, and everyone listening, what's one thing that you're hanging on to? Like you have that anger for still, so you still have that attachment that you can just let go of. Because the section right before evolve is release, and you can't really evolve until you release. And I mean, if you're talking about these constructs of our society, we have to let go of them in order to embrace the new stuff. And I think that's what's really hard. How do you let go of something that's, regulated and very, very structured? And I think we live in a world where people don't really want you to kind of stick out. Everyone needs to conform and fit into an industrial system. And the art of rock balancing, when I'm out there on the beach with people, no laws, no policemen or anything, it just gets me to just be person to person in our raw form as we were kind of created. And it's outside of all these, like, it's so amazing because then we're on the beach and we go back, through the forest back into the city, and then all the things pile up. We see the traffic and we remember the emails we got to respond to and all this kind of stuff. And it's almost like our true selves exist, but then all these things kind of come back to us that we attach ourselves to. So how do we let go of that? And the greatest tool that I have found is just the breath. And if you can really breathe and, like, everyone just take a breath and just enjoy this moment right now, because this is the start of something new right now. And for me, myself, what I have right now is really cool is I live in downtown San Francisco, and I'm lucky enough to have a garage. And I had the great insight because I actually live across the street from the Full House, like the actual Full House that the family stayed in. It's not the painted ladies that everyone's kind of thinking of, that row of houses, but there's some random house in San Francisco that the producer said, "Hey, the family's gonna live here." And at the end of the intro, there's like a little soft fade into this one house. And that house is right across the street from me. And all of these people every single day come to see this house, come to get their photo taken by this random house. And there's all these people from out of town parking in front of my garage. And I'm thinking, hey, why don't I just have an art gallery in my garage? I'll just put some prints up. Every Saturday is an open studio. You can make appointments and stuff for people to visit. So yesterday, I'm cleaning out the garage. I'm trying to sweep it. And I have a motorcycle I got a couple months ago that I love to death. And I put it out on the street. And someone did the weirdest move ever. They were trying to, like, parallel park, but then do a U-turn. And they just completely missed my motorcycle and just crunched it yesterday. My baby is just like,
Oh.
yeah, I just have this vision, because I'm so attached to it. And to me, I'm angry about that. Like, I could go in on her. Like, are you kidding me? All, like, it's just like by you trying to save 3 seconds to do a really fast U-turn instead of just making a right and a right and a right to get to where you need to go, I have to spend a month fixing your mistake. But I see it more as a part of a bigger thing. She just represents the energy, the life force of what is life trying to teach me right now. Luckily, I wasn't on the motorcycle. I
Yeah.
think it was a great wake-up call to be like, hey, you have a really amazing fancy bike, but it can get destroyed. You can go off a cliff or something like that. So for me, it's just understanding that this is part of the story. You're meant to experience these emotions in order to move on to the next moment, to evolve, to become, I guess, the fullest version of yourself. So that's kind of what I have to say about evolution. And it's hard. It's easier said than done, but that's why I continue to go back to the breath, because during these difficult times, during these difficult emotions, if you can really breathe through it and just understand that this is that moment, I'm supposed to experience this moment of frustration in order for me to, like, I can tell right now I'm gonna be a much better writer. I'm gonna definitely be on guard a lot more because of this experience. But let's say, like we were talking briefly about parents and parents dying or people dying and the whole act of death. It's like, when we are in sorrow, in mourning, it's just breathing and experiencing that. Like, this is that moment, and it's meant to guide us and teach us into the future. And it's so hard because, you know, we want to just cling on to that pain. But think about this, you know, every grandparent who dies leads to, you know, a grandchild who is born. I don't know if they're the same person getting reincarnated, but I think that it's also being open to what can happen next.
There's a gal by the name of Dr. Amy Novotny. She has an institute called the PABR, Pabr Institute. And I had her on my program, and this has to do with breathing and the breath. And she taught me a new way of breathing. I can now breathe through my ears. No, not really.
Can you share?
Yeah, everybody, here's what I want you to do. And what she did was she said that we have all been taught, we as children, as infants, breathed correctly. And if you were to look at an infant as they breathe, you will notice that when they inhale, the stomach doesn't push out. And when they exhale, the stomach doesn't go in. Okay? So what she had me learn was how not to move it, how to use my diaphragm to keep my chest from expanding, my stomach from expanding when I inhale, and then not to allow those things to compress. So we actually did what is counterintuitive. We actually did the opposite. So when I inhaled, I pulled in my stomach a little bit and tried to keep my chest from expanding. And then when I exhaled, I would push my stomach out, okay? Until I got to a place, and this is no longer involuntary. You know, you're now thinking about it. You're now in the moment of breathing. Until you get to the point, she says, you have to understand that inside your rib cage, there's more than enough room for your lungs to expand. You don't need to push your chest out. On top of the fact that when we are taught, push your chest out. All right, when you breathe, inhale and push, you know, and expand. And you're taking your spine out of alignment. So she says, get in a chair, push your butt all the way back to that corner of the chair, to the back, and then sit back in the chair. All right? And, you know, and allow the chair to cradle you in that fashion. And then this is when you do this breathing. And you inhale through the nose and you exhale through the mouth. And she uses a straw for the exhale. So you put a straw in your mouth. And I realize the whole controversy over straws, so get a paper one. or just purse your lips like you're going to whistle real tight, but make sure you blow out, you know, hard. And what you do is when you inhale, you stop, you count to three. And then you exhale and you count one. And then you inhale through the nose, count to three, exhale through the mouth, count to one. And you do this consciously. And of course, this takes a lot of concentration from the standpoint, almost along the lines of, okay, take your right hand and put it on your belly, and I want you to do circles. And then take your left hand and put it on the top of your head and pat your head at the same time.
Yeah.
You have to think about that. And it does a lot of different things, but I have to say that it has made me more conscious of my breathing process and also of my posture. She says, this is the reason why people have lower back pain, because they stand up straight. Your spine isn't supposed to be straight. It's supposed to have a curve in it, like in the lower back. That's supposed to be there. Why do they have those lumbar supports in chairs and seats and in your bucket seat in your truck or your car? So it's made me more conscious of my breathing in that respect. And so when I'm driving or even when I'm walking, I'll remember. It'll pop back into my head. And okay, I'm walking, but I can still practice this. You know, I don't have to do it loud so everybody is, you know, watching. To me, if we were to take that time to be conscious of our breathing, that brings us back to this moment. And you were commenting upon the moment, the now moment that we are, that, you know, we want to focus on, right? And that moment's now, and now it's now, and it's now, and now, and now. And I don't know if you've ever watched, if you've ever used sound editing software. But you notice that there's this line Okay, and it's usually in the middle of the screen. And that's the demarcation line between the wave that you see being created by the voice and the other side where there's nothing. There's zero. There's no wave at all. Now, where there is no wave at all, that's the future. That's the future, okay? And where there is a wave already, where you see those jiggly lines like an EKG, that's the past. That's already happened. It's that line between those two sections that's the now moment. Now, here's the real interesting paradox, Travis. The moment, and I mean the literal instant that you have heard the words I've said, the instant that you have interpreted them, the instant that you have comprehended what I have said and vice versa, you're already in the past. It happens that fast. And when I observed that on my screen and began to analogize that, I thought, wow, it doesn't take much to go into the past. It really does not. And we do that a lot, and we get attached to the past. I mean, I'm listening to music that I listened to in the 70s. I've been listening to it for the last few years in my truck. And I'm loving it because it's great nostalgia, brings back wonderful memories. But I'm thinking, am I doing myself a disservice here? By the same token, what's the harm? I'm not really interested in a lot of the music, and I'm not critical of the music of today. Not at all. Because every piece of music at any time in our human history has served a purpose. You know? I mean, classical music used to be considered evil and satanic. And now it's some of the most beautiful, beautiful work that you can sit and listen to. And I love classical music. When we come back, let's talk about the steps of the Rock Balancer's Guide and creating these, as you call them, balances. Because I think that it would be important to begin that process of understanding not only the literal description, but also the metaphor as you go through the process of creating these beautiful, I'll call them stacks of rocks or balances. I am fascinated by this. I mean, even as a kid, I'm sure you know, we all would come across these rocks in our yards or wherever, maybe if you were near the beach and you'd pick one up. I mean, I've done that recently because I live here in Santa Barbara right along the coast, and I go out to the beach every once in a while. There'll be a rock that'll sort of call out to me, and I'll pick it up, and I'll say, okay, you're coming home with me.
Richard.
And with that calling, we'll take a quick break. I'm Richard Dugan along with Travis Ruskus, and we're talking about the Rock Balancer's Guide, and we'll be right back here on Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World.
Tell me your stories, I'll do my best to understand you.
And welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I was getting a calling just a few moments ago from a rock that's out on the beach there. My guest is Travis Ruskus, and we're talking about the Rock Balancer's Guide. That was beautiful, I have to tell you. I like that. Let's jump into the process. Let's just say I'm out at the beach. Here we have one called Hedry's Beach. You go one direction and you can have your dogs off of leash. You go the other direction, your dogs can be on leash. But there are lots of rocks all over the place. And there's an abundance thereof. We don't have to worry about that. And we're not taking the rocks anywhere. And we don't have to worry about environmental issues because I'm sure the rocks are going to be moved around by the incoming tide and all of that good stuff. So, with all of those concerns aside, let's begin the process. I'm sitting there in the sand, and I'm surrounded by 30 or 40 different sizes of rocks. And most of them are going to be smooth, especially if you're out at the beach. That's going to be an interesting situation. So how do you begin this process? You've decided or you've had the prompting, it's time to create another balance, Travis. It's time. You're now getting the call. Travis, build.
Yeah.
Stack them, build them,
come
balance
to
them.
The beach. Come you to need beach. To make another balance. Time to inspire others and yourself. Yeah. So I'll go down on the beach, and you know, I love what you're saying with the before the break, the audio beam, and how, you know, it's a present moment. And when you're thinking about the present moment, you're actually in the present moment. And I have a little section of my book that, you know, most people might not see that I really want to make sure I talk about, because that's how I start. Is I just sit down and I meditate for 5 minutes. I just breathe for 5 minutes. I kind of just slow down. And what I think is, when you can really be in the present moment, you are traveling at the speed of light. And, you know, a lot of us think, okay, well, in order to do that, I got to be traveling on a rocket ship at, you know, however many miles an hour. But really, it's just being full awareness, because there's a difference between awareness and thoughts. And the simplest analogy I can give you is, think of awareness like I'm at the beach and I'm just trying to visualize or see the blue sky and the clouds passing through the blue sky. And I think for us, we think, okay, well, the sky is the sky, there's clouds, and I'm the cloud, and like the sky is the same. But the blue sky always stays the same. Sure, it might shift to sunset, we give a whole discussion, but for the most part, there's a blue sky. And these clouds passing by are just your thoughts. And as long as you can just become aware of that, that they're just thoughts passing, you don't have to cling so hard to it. And that's going to help you really create these rock balances that will blow other people's minds, but also yourself, because you're able to go to places that you would have never thought, because you're just kind of open truly to what the present moment is guiding you towards. So how the process works for me is, I'll go down to the beach or in the woods or something like that, just an amazing landscape, and meditate, breathe, experience myself in the moment. Like, this is my story. This is what I meant to do in this moment. And I will put a disclaimer up. You have to be extremely careful with the rocks that you do touch, because the national parks come after me, and I don't want to have to have them continue to come after me because of irresponsible rock balancing from you or the listeners. But the simple rule is this: just don't disturb any plant or animal life. So if you're like in the woods and you see, oh, this is a cool rock, but like there's this moss or like this grass growing on top of it, you shouldn't rip the rock out and leave like a huge crater. If you absolutely have to, put the rock back exactly as you found it to continue that kind of life cycle. But for me, I like to find locations that have all these rocks, like you're saying. There's just 40, 50, 100, 1,000 rocks around you. So how do you pick the rock to start with? And I have a great little thing that I like to teach my students when we first start, because they're like, which rock do I pick up? And I'm like, oh, that one over there. You know, it's not like that at all. It's like, do you choose the rock, or does the rock choose you? And as people start to scatter the beach and start to find these rocks, it's interesting watching this moment unfold of this attraction and how we get kind of drawn to certain things. And it's almost as if the rock balances create themselves. I'm just the catalyst and it's moving through me, but it's pretty trippy to kind of think about like that. So, long-winded answer to the first step, you just sit down and breathe. And then you move on to opportunity. And I almost called this section fear, but I was really worried that people wouldn't read the chapter. So if you look at it, it's really experiencing that fear and then breathing through it to embrace the opportunity. So for example, this interview that could be, you know, scary, like before every interview, there's a bit of a heartbeat that goes on. But once you start, it's just nothing but opportunity right now. So the opportunity is kind of selecting the different rocks that you want. I like to kind of, usually what happens is when I close my eyes or do an open eye meditation, just breathing for 5 minutes, I'll get a feeling or a vision of either a shape or in an element that I want to encompass in it. So I think the one that you were talking about where every generation is an evolution of the previous one. Mm-hmm. That was tied to motherhood. So I was trying to create a rock balance because it just came to me. I think I was doing it on Mother's Day and I wasn't able to come back home to spend time with my mom. So I was just thinking, you know, how can I honor my mother? What would be something that can just show her just by looking at it, how much I appreciate her and how much I would appreciate, you know, my wife in the future. But without getting into the past or the future like that, it's just showing that element of motherhood, of that. So I just did one pretty recently called Risk, and I was really feeling risk. I was thinking, okay, what is the riskiest rock bounce I can do? And then I kind of start to pick the rocks. I work through that. And I like to select about, I'll kind of scour the beach a little bit, select, you know, rocks that call out to me. Obviously, I don't want to select too many because then you get kind of overwhelmed with the paradox of choice. You know, when you have so many options, how do you choose one?
Mm-hmm.
Especially when you got to just do one rock at a time.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll put the, let's say, you know, a handful of rocks on the boulder or wherever what I want to rock balance on. I suggest people start their balance on rock versus wood, just because as you start to have, as the balance gets heavier, the wood at the bottom will slightly give, and it will shift the balance quite dramatically. So try, like we're saying, don't build it on sand, build it on rock and kind of go from there. So what happens after that is that you just have to believe in yourself, and you are going to encounter failure. And it's amazing. I love to laugh at my students when they encounter failure because they're so attached to the failure. And I'm like, did you see what happened? Did you see actually what rock or that weak spot in the third rock where it kind of collapsed the whole thing? And it's making that awareness to the points of failure that will cause you to build it back much stronger. So, you know, I don't know what they're going to do about that building in downtown SF. Like, you have this huge, massive building that is built on sand, but I know the next time that they build, like, the Chase Center, like, is a great example, that it was probably built on much, much stronger foundation, or you can basically learn from your failures is what I'm trying to say here. So that sense of belief is you have to believe in something that hasn't happened yet. And this book is a great example of that. Yeah. I just did as many rock bounces as I could. And, you know, I got a contact form submission on my website of a UK publisher saying, hey, we're really into your work. We're trying to do a book on rock bouncing. We think you're the guy for it. Let's connect. Let's collaborate. And, you know, for me, I just, as I'm writing each page, I'm thinking, you know, I believe in this book. I believe that there's going to be a finished product. I believe that I can put this in somebody's hands before the book is even finished. And I think that's essential when you're balancing on the rocks, or, you know, rock balancing is just a metaphor for anything in life. I'm sure so many people are going to be listening to this and never even touch a rock, but let's say it's, you know, just your dream, whatever your greatest passion is. You got to breathe, experience the moment, embrace fear and opportunity, and then believe. And that's where the hourglass shifts, is in the belief. Once you believe, you're going to start to see, and you'll see, okay, what is the natural almost ending to this? I know it's done to me when I have a very simple rule. Always go farther than the previous balance. So I'm just going to continue to keep going and keep going. But when my hands start shaking, that's when I know I'm kind of getting away with something, and I've pushed myself to that edge. So that edge is that moment of balance. And my favorite thing is just sitting with these rock bounces, and it's just almost like you go back to the breathe. It's like the rock balance becomes a signal to you to continue to find the moment. And a little hack that I do in my workshops is when we first start with everyone, we all sit down and we all breathe together. And when I get them clear, I kind of do a little mental exercise that I can't quite go into now just because it's a little in depth.
Mm-hmm.
But when they're in that peaceful state, that calm awareness, I think, okay. And people listening to this, even you, Richard, next time you're meditating or just breathing, just walking down, can you describe this feeling in one word? And everyone can, and everyone has a different word. And all I ask is, what was your word? And I'll get people that are like, you know, peace, and I'll get people that are like power or let go, which is two words actually, but
my not word the way I spell it.
My word that came to me a year or two or three, I don't even know at this point, when I really did this on myself first, was drop. And this mantra is what you need to remember when you're making this rock bounce, because you're going to start thinking about, man, that was so stupid how that person knocked over my motorcycle. But you just need to drop that, Trav. You got to drop it. And whatever it is, like letting go or peace, you just got to think back to whatever that mantra is. Because what I've, it's so crazy, but what I believe is that this mantra is what we're going to spend our entire lives in pursuit of in order to achieve that peace. So for me, when I can drop things, that's when I have achieved enlightenment. But it's hard for me. I'm not perfect. So as you balance, have this moment of balance, remember your mantra, and you have achieved it. You are what you think you are, whether it's good or bad. And, you know, if you can believe in yourself and the positive aspects, like, you're right. So once it's in balance, you just kind of enjoy it. Do whatever you want to do. Just kind of hang out. And really, all a rock balance is just a huge symbol of the moment. So if you can think about the moment, that's amazing. And as a side note to me, it's become quite difficult because it's almost about the act of creating new artwork for me. And it's like, where can I make the most amazing rock balance to blow people's minds, to get them to appreciate the moment instead of just appreciating the moment? And I've started to do these like 10-minute videos, 20-minute videos of just long form recording. I'll sit with the video, just have it recorded. And then to me, I'm just like, okay, for 20 minutes, you're just going to sit here, just enjoy the moment. And from there, I would just touch on what happens next is just the limits. And you just got to kind of reconsider what your true limits are, but also like when you've hit that limit. Because I find it's quite common that someone, as soon as they do a rock balance, like at a workshop or something with me, they'll instantly look at me for validation. I'm like, don't do it for me, do it for you. But then when they have five rocks, I'm like, do you think you could do six? And it's almost like me challenging them, getting that them to open up, to push a little bit farther. That it's hard how that works, but you're almost giving them permission to go farther. And then what happens is people say, okay, you know, my hands are shaking. I've reached my edge. Like after that seventh rock, I'm at my edge. I've had several people get caught up in the just one more mindset where they're never satisfied. Mm-hmm. Where like, oh man, I had this one girl that we did, she had like five rocks. And I'm like, you know, go beyond that. You can do this. And she had 10 rocks. And then she was like, I was working with her and she's like, how can we get 11? How can we get 12? How can we get 13? How can we get 18? And it was like the 19th rock, the tiniest little rock that destroyed the whole thing. And the look on her face was just priceless, because it's like, you set yourself up for this. And all a rock balance really is just the point which you feel happy and content with yourself. It's it. Like if you can be happy with one rock, hats off. Like congrats, you have achieved nirvana. If you can be happy with zero rocks, you like, power to you.
Yeah.
But if you're happy with eight, and that's essentially, like I said previously, it's just energy going through the rocks. So if you look at a rock balance, that's you. You're looking in the mirror. That's your energy. So be happy with it. Don't say, oh, I hate that third rock. That bottom one looks terrible. Like, what's with that ugly color? Like, no. Be happy. This is you. Like, it's there's so many things to talk about. But you had mentioned very kind of briefly that, you know, a few minutes ago, how the diversity of the rocks. And what's so amazing about the practice of rock balancing, as I'm teaching others, is that the rocks don't care about your age, race, religion, you know, what you had to eat. They don't care about that. They treat everyone the same. And if you can treat every rock the same, not favor like the third rock or the top rock or the bottom rock, just embrace it all. Like, it's very therapeutic. Mm-hmm. I think people can heal dramatically just by looking at a rock balance. So once we're here and we've, you know, fully just we're rock balancing and we're happy with it, that's when the hardest part comes, and my favorite part of the whole workshop, because I'm teaching this act of release, of letting go, of detachment. And, you know, in the circle of life, like everything that's created is destroyed. So you got to embrace that and let go, like we've talked about in depth, in order to embrace that new moment to evolve. So that's how you kind of, that's the process that I've discovered through my time of how to make not only incredible rock balances, but also how to live life, because ultimately the rocks are just a metaphor for whatever vision you're trying to achieve. So if you're approaching a rock balance with skepticism, and by the end of it, you're feeling abundance, you're feeling powerful, imagine how you're going to feel when you step off that beach and you go back and you drive your car. Be careful, don't drive it, you know, aggressive or anything, but what's mm-hmm. to say you're stuck in traffic on the way to the beach, you're just cursing that guy that cut you off, like, come on, you're only 3 seconds ahead of me, do you have to risk both of our lives? Then on the way back, something similar happens and you can just wish that person gratitude, wish that person peace, find happiness with that person. Because you don't know, they could be in a rush. They could have someone, like you're saying, that like you experienced, you know, you had someone living with you that passed away and you got to get home for the ambulance. You have no context to it. So it's just kind of, you know, embracing the moment around you, and it's trying to teach you something. So yeah. I can keep going with that, but just wanted to hear kind of your thoughts. Or
well, one of the fascinating things for me is the best analogy, and I encourage people to go to not just your website, which, by the way, folks, is Travis Ruskus. That's TravisRuskus.com. To not only experience the work that he is doing, but also maybe go to YouTube and type in mandala building, because to me, that's the next most incredible thing. We would have Tibetan monks come to the Santa Barbara Art Museum. They would take a whole big space and they would begin to build a mandala. And they would have a camera overhead that would show this online, and you could go and watch them doing it live. And then when it's all over at the end of the week or whatever the number of days are, they sweep it all up, they take it down to the beach, and they sprinkle it out into the surf. So the mandala is now gone. But man, what a beautiful design they created. Oh, it's just incredible. But the painstaking process of putting down those grains of colored sand in the right places and on and on and on. Just incredible.
And even with them too, like experiencing, because they do, it's almost like a little straw or a little kind of tube or a little pour
yes.
of the sand.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
It's like experiencing the sand as it's falling continually. It's like a big waterfall.
Yeah. Yeah. Or yeah. just a grain by grain waterfall almost sometimes, because some of the lines
exactly.
can be so, so narrow. It's just beautiful, the process. And it's one of those things where everything's temporal. In this material world, it's all temporary. Nothing is permanent. I said that to somebody because they were complaining about, for example, our political situation in this country right now, which, quite honestly, might be to a certain extreme, but it's no different than it has been. I interviewed a gentleman years ago, not too long ago, I should say, not years ago, but not too long ago, maybe 2018, maybe last year. And he wrote a book about how we need a new revolution. We need to return to a rational form of government. My question to him was, well, so when was the last time we had a rational form of government? He said, about 2 to 3 minutes after the Declaration of Independence was signed. That was the last time. And I'm going, yikes. Anyway, I said to her, I says, just remember, I get your frustration. I get all of the angst. I get that. But remember, this is temporary. I know you were no big fan of Reagan, but he's not in office anymore. That was temporary, and we moved on. And every one of these political phases is just temporary. So, you know, try to keep it in that context. She wasn't too happy about that because she wanted things to change now. And I was like, okay, I get you. All right.
Yeah. You know, as do I, right?
Sure.
I want everyone right now to just go balance a rock, but they're not gonna.
No.
Like, there's a handful of people that will, and those people may have, you know, these deep spiritual experiences. But one thing that you said too is that you were watching the mandalas on YouTube.
Yeah.
And, you know, watching my videos on YouTube. And mm-hmm. for me, the reason why I'm putting this stuff out there is because these YouTube videos are gonna last longer than I am.
Mm-hmm.
But ultimately, you know, the internet may not be around forever. Like, you know, theories aside, it will be around a while, but ultimately the sun is going to get big enough where it eats up the earth in a couple billion years, and all the YouTube videos will be destroyed.
Yeah.
So it's like, during that time, how can you make an impact in other people's lives? And that's what I'm just kind of challenging you, Richard, which you're doing with this amazing series that you have, but also the people listening. Like, how can you, maybe when you're driving in traffic, let somebody in?
Yeah. You know, by the way, if you were to take the sound wave, sound wave that I referred to earlier, and of course it's going from right to left, which is rather interesting that it goes from right to left instead of left to right. But anyway, if you were to take the sound wave and turn it vertically instead of horizontally, it would look pretty close to one of your balances. It really would.
Very true. I've never even. Yeah,
well, I just thought of that as I'm looking at the wave coming across here. I'm going, oh, there's little ones there, and big ones, and little ones. It's just amazing. This is fascinating, and I would love to continue our conversation on this. However, even though the podcast could go on indefinitely, unfortunately, the radio broadcast, they only give us so much time, and you and I only have so much time because each of us has our respective rock balancing activities that we must get to. And so I want to thank you so much, Travis, for giving us so much time here on the program to discuss this. This is, to me, just fascinating, and helping people to discover the mindfulness, the mindful art of balance through rock balancing. And it can be done in a lot of different ways. And we encourage people to get out and practice it. Go to your website, which, of course, is travisruskus.com. We encourage you to go there. We will be linked to your website as well so that people can go there and find out more about you, maybe even order a copy of the book and learn more about how to breathe, to experience opportunity, belief, balance, limits, as well as release, and how to evolve. And if you should ever find yourself downshore here in the Central Coast, Santa Barbara, California, love to have you not only in studio, but, you know, what would really be cool is if you were to come down here, we'd go down to the beach with a little recording studio equipment that I have. Sit there, secure the microphones in stands into the sand, and do a little rock balancing while we converse about this process and some of the new insights that you've come across. I think that would be a fun way to talk more about this.
Well, it's funny that you say that too, because I'm actually thinking about doing a series of just rock balancing with people and having a little interview. So I'll definitely take you up on that offer in the future.
Absolutely.
And I wanted to really, really quickly say that the reason why my mantra is drop is because I love life so much. I've loved this conversation. It is so amazing to meet a like-minded person like this that it's hard for me to let go. But ultimately, that is where I will find, you know, total enlightenment, is when I can hang up this call and move on to the next moment. So,
yeah.
Richard, thank you so much for having me on. I really appreciated your time.
You are very welcome. And the beauty of it is that the rocks, metaphorically speaking, that we have stacked here today, even though, yes, there'll be a point of time when we will pull the rock out and watch it tumble down, have added to our ability to build the next balance down the road. We've learned so much. And I wanted to touch on one quick thing here before I let you go. And I have three final questions for you. But
okay.
But you made the reference to the word failure. And I'm beginning the process, and this has nothing to do with being PC at all. I'm beginning the process of trying to eliminate from my vocabulary success and failure, the words. Because when you think about it, that girl you described who was, you know, we went to one, we went to 5, 10, 15, 20, whatever it was, and then, of course, it fell, and she was so attached to it and so on and so forth. She didn't fail. And that's the one thing that I think that we need to reevaluate how we view this. As I said before, Edison did not fail 990 times. He never failed, nor did he succeed. He only found a way to make the light bulb work. And then, of course, others came along and perfected it further and further and evolved the process. It was an evolutionary process to where we are today. So she learned, this girl that you talked about, learned from that experience. But that was, and that's really, to me, the whole process. It's not about success and failure. It's just about learning and growing and evolving. I mean, I can't think of an experience of evolution where there was failure in the process. It's all just, it's neutral. It's evolution. Is that a fair way to put that?
Yeah, it's great that you just deconstructed it like that, because last year I did a balance called Discovery, and it was directly tied to this. And I like to do a little mantra, you know, with each balance to kind of get people to understand each thing, like risk or something, a little bit more. But with Discovery, it's treating failure as more of a discovery process.
Yeah.
That's really it.
Yeah. I have three final questions for you, and the first of the three is, who is Travis Ruskus?
Man, that's tough. Because it's like almost the label of me versus who I actually am. You know, I think of my parents put this name on me, but I'm just energy. So Travis Ruskus is just energy.
What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you're doing now?
I want others to let go of their limiting beliefs, to understand that there is infinite potential that surrounds us. So if you think about how big the ocean is, stand at the edge of the ocean and really try and understand how many drops of water are in that ocean. That's what's in front of you in your journey.
And finally, what is your life's purpose?
So my life's purpose is to, like I kind of just said, is to help others realize the infinite potential within themselves.
Travis Ruskus, again, thank you so much for joining us here on the program. It's just been a great pleasure, and I do look forward to meeting you in person and maybe doing some balancing off of Headry's Beach or below the cliffs of Cliff Drive, and having a great time doing it and continuing this conversation.
Thanks again, Richard. I really appreciate it.
You bet. I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love to Lal.